Okay, so I want to say a few words of recapitulation from last week, and we'll see where we go from there. So last week, if you remember, we were talking about the traditional notion of death and rebirth, and this whole cycle that traditional Buddhism sees us as undergoing in terms of what's called the wheel of life. So we are ignorant of the way things are, spiritually ignorant of the way things are. We somehow take form. We take on life through driven by this spiritual ignorance. And we chase whatever we can in life to satisfy this sense of a separate self, in a way to overcome this sense of a separate self. But the sense of a separate self is itself an illusion. That is the basis of spiritual ignorance. So we're on a hiding to nothing. And eventually we die, and depending upon karmic volitional kind of propensities, we take on another form. That was a traditional kind of wheel of life in a very brief and probably inadequate kind of summary. And what I was saying was that you don't have to believe that traditional perspective of death and rebirth. But if you do, then it gives the whole teaching of conditioned co-production and the nature of reality a much vaster, even cosmic kind of perspective. If you don't believe in it, well, it still sort of works. It still sort of works in that you can just think of this lifetime, and you can think of the habitual, unhelpful ways that we behave. And you can see those habitual, unhelpful ways as the wheel of life just going on and on. Sangharakshita Bhante calls it the reactive mind. So we have some sort of stimulus, and we respond in a habitual way. I don't know about you, but I can get like that with my mother. I mean, you don't get like that with my mother. You probably get like that with your own mother. She'll say something, and in a way it's said in all innocence, but it touches some sort of button in me that causes me as a 43-year-old man to behave like a 12-year-old in response. And that is the reactive mind. And you could see the wheel of life as representing all our reactive patterns that just keep us from experiencing our true potential, yeah? and the way things are. You could see it in those terms, or if you can take on board the fact that this might not be the first time that we've done this, as it were, in terms of lifetimes, then it adds this whole extra impetus to stop going through this cycle, this sort of cycle that takes so much energy and uses so much resources and causes unsatisfactoriness in the end, to somehow find another way of living. And certainly the Buddha is said to have been driven, the Buddha-to-be, as it were, was driven by that sort of motivation in order to search for enlightenment and eventually become enlightened. You know, he saw intuitively this cycle of birth and suffering and old age and sickness and death, and wanted a way out. So he wanted a way out of that cyclic mode of conditionality that is symbolized pictorially sometimes by this image of the wheel of life. And what I was saying is that there is a way out, because otherwise Buddhism wouldn't exist. Buddhism points to a way out. It gives us a path out of this reactive mind. And if you think in those terms of rebirth, well, it gives us a path out from this whole cycle of birth and death. And that path is also built upon this teaching of conditioned co-production. What Buddhism's saying is that we don't have to just react to conditions in a way that's unhelpful. We can set up positive conditions that will progressively enable us to become more content, more equanimous, more kind, more aware, more generous, more, in a way, in touch with each other and the world around us, and lessen this sense of separation of self. And to the degree that the Buddhist path does that, to the degree that we're able to follow the Buddhist path and do that, to that degree we're coming closer to the nature of how things are. So this progressive mode of conditionality is often called the path in Buddhism. And there are lots of formulations of the path. There's a Noble Eightfold Path, there's a Threefold Path, and there's a particular formulation of the path that Sangharakshita talks about, which he calls the Spiral Path. The Spiral Path, which consists of 12 links in this progressive stage of conditionality. And I'm not going to go through those in detail, but I am going to start touching on how you start on that spiral path. What's the starting point that gets us off the wheel and this reactive mode of behaviour onto a more progressive, positive mode of behaviour, mode of functioning? So Sangharakshita calls this progressive mode of behaviour the creative mind, as opposed to the reactive mind. So you've got two ways of the mind operating: reactive, creative. And I think they're really, really good words. They're his words. They're not from the Buddhist tradition, but I think they're really, really good words for describing what the experience is really like. When I react, it is like a slightly mechanical response that happens without much awareness. It's because there isn't much awareness that the mechanical response happens. So my mother says something and I snap. Doesn't happen all the time. Don't look horrified. Geraldine looks horrified. But it does happen. And that's because there wasn't much awareness. There isn't much pause. And it is a complete sort of action-reaction. You know, like a machine, a mechanical kind of response. A creative mind can pause, can have perspective, can see the wider situation, can stay in touch with metta, with the human situation, can stay in touch with unsatisfactoriness, doesn't just respond automatically, but responds creatively through awareness. Yeah. So those two modes of conditionality, in a sense, are all that we need to worry about. In practice, they're all that we need to worry about. I was talking earlier, wasn't I, or the week before probably, about this general formulation of conditionality, that everything is arising dependence of conditions. And then what I'm trying to do is say that Buddha brought that down into our experience, into what it is like to be human, and you've got these two modes of behaviour, of conditionality. Okay. So I'll just pause there. Is there are there any questions or clarification on what I've just said? It's a bit of a recap. Yeah, so far so good. Okay. Okay, so should we just look at what that gap is? It's called the gap. How we make the switch from a reactive mode to a progressive spiral, progressive, a creative mode. Yeah. Does anybody know? Does anybody want to explain it?
It has something to do with awareness.
Yeah, it's definitely got something to do with awareness. It's definitely to do with somehow bringing awareness into our experience. Can you say anything more specifically? Yeah. So certainly be mindful, hopefully even before our reactions kick in. So what would it be that we're trying to be mindful of if we're trying to catch our reactions even before they happen?
The space between the reactions.
Space between
the actions.
Yeah, the space between the actions, yeah. Yeah. Certainly we're trying to introduce space into our experience. There's a particular kind of way of thinking about this, and you're almost there, but it's a bit more specific than that. Right. So certainly bringing awareness from the past, in a way just becoming more aware of the sort of person we are, really, really helps. Yeah. Yeah. So we've brought that awareness from the past. So we can be on the lookout then. So I can be on the lookout when I go and visit my mother for particular triggering conditioning. Sorry?
That's
what you do with yours, yeah, 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 yeah. It doesn't help, no. But the theory's good.
You can frame it with positive and negative and neutral. Sort of, you can put that sort of frame.
Ah, well, that's onto something, yes. Positive, neutral and negative.
Yes.
What? What? Positive, well, negative and what?
Well, when you're changing your sort of view on the experience, yes. You kind of frame that.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. With a larger perspective, you mean?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's a lens.
Yeah, it is. It is a lens, yeah. So all of those things are really, really useful. They're not always enough, and we're not always going to be able to do this. If it was easy, then we'd, in a way, all be progressing up the spiral all the time, and we'd have been enlightened by now. So it's not easy. Where the tradition identifies the opportunity, where it identifies the opportunity to move from reactive to creative mode, is by bringing awareness to our feelings, our sensations. So Buddhism differentiates between feelings and sensations and something that's more active that we do. So feelings and sensations just happen to us, depending on the conditions that have gone before. So we can't help but have feelings and sensations. I mean physical feelings as well as emotional feelings. We can't help but have some sort of sensation response to things that happen. Yeah? But normally what we do is we very quickly move from the feeling or sensation and a way of reacting to it. So if the feeling or sensation happens to be unpleasant, we very, very, very quickly move to trying to push it away in some way. Yeah? And that's an active choice. But it happens so quickly that often there doesn't seem to be a gap there at all. If the feeling is really pleasant, what we do is we move towards grasping it for more. Yeah, we immediately want more. We've only had, I don't know, we haven't even had the first mouthful of chocolate cake, and there's immediately this attachment to more. And again, Buddhism's saying that you can have a pleasant, in theory, you can have a pleasant sensation without that grasping. And if you can just remain aware without that craving kicking in, then you've got an opportunity to move to a more progressive mode, a more creative mode of responding. So what Buddhism is saying is be aware of our feelings and our sensations, and they are either painful or unpleasant in some way, or they're pleasurable and pleasant in some way, or they're sort of neutral. But there's always one of those three kind of tones to our experience. So when somebody talks to us harshly, we're likely to experience an unpleasant sensation somewhere in our emotional world, in our internal world. And it's very, very easy to snap and just speak harshly back. And that is the reactive mind. That is the reactive response. So it's not that the actual feeling or sensation was the problem. It's all right to have an unpleasant feeling or sensation according to this model of Buddhism. We will have unpleasant feelings or sensations. We can't help that. Yeah, sometimes. It's just how do we then respond to them? And similarly, we will have pleasant feelings and pleasant sensations, and that's great. The problem comes when we grasp and crave and want more and more. And we can make a whole lifetime's habit out of that, chasing pleasure and avoiding pain. Actually, that's what we can, if we're not careful, build a whole life upon. And we give it fancy names, we call it meaning, we call it pursuit of career or relationship or material comfort or security, but actually it boils down to chasing pleasure or pleasurable feelings and avoiding painful ones. Yeah? And Buddhism's saying there's another way of living that isn't in this push-pull, chase-push kind of mode. And the secret is to bring awareness, as much awareness as we can, to the raw sensations, to the raw feelings, be they pleasant or unpleasant. If we can stay with those raw sensations and feelings, and normally they're experienced somewhere in the body, and this is why meditation is sort of so helpful, because it teaches us to stay with our experience and notice our experience. If we can stay with that, then we've got the opportunity, because we've created a bit of a gap, to respond in a creative way. And the way that traditionally we respond, or the first kind of sign that there's a progressive creative response, is the arising of Shraddha. So do you remember all the way back in week, two or something, we talked about confidence, trust, this word Shraddha, and we talked about different modes of Shraddha, different types of thinking, different ways of thinking about Shraddha. I said that it was faith was an inadequate term for it. A confidence, trust was perhaps closer to it. But it was nevertheless this sense that there is a truth, a reality beyond this mundane experience, that we can move towards that, that we do have a response towards truth and beauty, an intuitive response to truth and beauty and goodness, and that we can embody that more and more. So Shraddha is what we need to bring when we stay aware of our feelings. Awareness alone isn't sort of enough. We need to bring confidence, trust, that there is a way out of our normal way of behaving, our reactive way of behaving. So we bring awareness imbued with Shraddha. And then it's said that the whole spiral path opens up. There is Shraddha, and if there's Shraddha, then there's said to be joy. And if there's joy, there's said to be rapture and bliss and contentment and stillness and all sorts of things that are really, really good arise independent upon Shraddha, staying with our experience with Shraddha. So bringing awareness to our experience, staying with that, with confidence, with trust, with faith, with Shraddha, that we can move beyond our normal way of functioning. Yeah, that's the sort of secret. That's the way out, rather than either grasping after pleasant experience or pushing away unpleasant ones.